we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, pulling pins on truth grenades, that's what we're doing. I'm in this next dipper I'm about to jump into. I'm calling it, basically, it's a question. Is Mexico a failed state? Why do we care? You may look at it and go, America first. What happens on our southern border, as long as it's not crossing the border, is not something that we care about. To some degree, I get that. I will also tell you that it does cross our border, and that's the problem. When you have a failed state on your border, there is no way it can't bleed over. This is not like a failed state on the Horn of Africa, Somalia. This is not like a failed state somewhere out in the Caribbean, Haiti. This is not like a failed state in Southwest Asia, Afghanistan. This is literally our southern border. Our southern border, second only to the border with Canada, is, you know, is a long stretch of ground. On the other side of it is oftentimes anarchy. Now, I know there are still tourist destinations. I have a friend who just was just down there. And listen, I get it. Me personally, you couldn't pay me to travel there right now. This is the way I feel. I mean, and part of that, I'll be honest with you, I'm just going to be very candid and say that I am less inclined to want to be in places where they don't speak my language since my tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. It's like it's kind of a thing. We went to, as a family, to the Dominican Republic to a resort after my second deployment, and I just had the heebie-jeebies the entire time. Did not feel good. I wanted to stay inside the resort more often than not because it just felt like I was inside the FOB and I was safer inside the wire. I mean, just say what it is. It's just the kind of the way I felt. Haven't traveled outside of the country much in the last decade. Most of my travels have been inside the country, and I'm good with that. A lot of things to see here in America. I also have a dream, though, of going to Europe. I want a bucket list. I want to take the lovely Charlene on a trip to Europe. I want to go back and see where I accepted Christ in England. I'd love to do one of those, like, Viking River cruises on the Rhine River. JP just got back from a trip that I'm still jealous over, going to the Vatican and everything else. That was cool.
You got to go to Normandy, too.
Normandy. I would love to see Normandy, man. I would love to see Normandy. I have no desire to go to Mexico right now. And yes, I've been to Mexico several times. I've been there on mission trips, and I've been there on vacation. But Mexico, some are saying, is almost to the point of being a failed state, at least in certain portions of it. What is a failed state? There's an actual definition. A failed state is a term that sort of originated back like in the 1990s. It was designed originally to describe Somalia. Think about Black Hawk Down. If you've ever seen the movie Black Hawk Down, you're watching anarchy. You're watching the strong man who has his influence in certain places and the government has no influence anywhere. In fact, you even wonder why there's a government. The country descends into disorder. There's a coup or whatever else that dismantles government's ability to do things like, you know, standard issues of law enforcement, security, territorial control. Can you control the borders? Can you do tax collection to have the revenue to provide the essential services that are needed? And then if you can't do those things, you wind up with widespread corruption and criminality. And think about what happened in Afghanistan. The Taliban seized control in Afghanistan. Anarchy. It was every man for himself. There's no centralized government. They called it government, but it really wasn't. What you had was warlords, strong men. You had thugs. You had the Taliban terrorizing people. The rule of law was out the door. And guess what happened? Al-Qaeda decided that was a great place to base themselves. So they did. Look at Somalia. The Black Hawk Down situation was a direct result of a failed state. We were there to provide aid. Next thing you know, it turned into mission creep. We're trying to stop warlords. And then next thing you know, our friend Mike Durant shot down in the Battle of Mogadishu. A failed state on your border is a really bad thing. If you go look at the island of Hispaniola, two countries on one island, Haiti on one side, Dominican Republic on the other. Now, the Dom Rep, Dominican Republic, it has its own problems, but is generally speaking stable. The Dom Rep has a border on its island with Haiti, and they don't want Haitians coming over because Haiti is crazy right now. Haiti is the kind of place where you have like I mean, I'm not kidding when I say this. You have thug gang leaders who drink the blood of their victims. I mean, this is Haiti is a place that is just like off limits for travel. I guarantee you, if you look, you'll find a State Department advisory saying don't go there. But when you have that on your border, it creates issues across the border. There's no way for it not to. When we saw the mass migration across our southern border over the last few years, what we saw was a country that A, had no controls, B, was not being stopped on our side, let's be honest, but C, was also probably incapable of doing the things it was doing. And a lot of the people who came across our border were coming here from Mexico because they saw a way to get out of the anarchy. One of the largest portions of the GDP of the entire country of Mexico is what's known as remittances. That's people who come to America to work and they wire money back home. If GDP for your country is based in part upon people going elsewhere to find work, you're verging on becoming an economic fail state at the very least. But now you've got things like what the cartels are doing. And the cartels, let me paint a picture for you. Think about Israel. Think about Lebanon on the northern side of Israel. And within Lebanon, you have a non-nation state entity called Hezbollah that controls huge swaths of territory, has its own armies, and literally runs the show, and the government of Lebanon could do nothing about it. That's the cartels on our southern border. Now, President Trump has most recently, for the first time ever, declared the drug cartels in Mexico to be terrorist entities. That gives him powers to do things that were never done before. I can't guarantee we won't see some form of military action. It's not going to surprise me if something blows up in the jungles and a drug lab goes away because, I don't know, maybe a JDAM just lands right smack in the middle of it. Or maybe a Tomahawk cruise missile comes flying in from an offshore submarine. Who knows? All I'm saying is, by naming them as terrorist entities, he also has the right to freeze their assets in banks. He can sanction people for doing deals with them. But the cartels have become like non-nation state entities in Mexico. They control whole swaths of territory. There are places where the government can't even go. And even if it did, would it matter? Because it appears half the time the government is in cahoots with them. They're a trillion-dollar industry, and they are creating a failed state where anything goes. I'll have more of this when we get back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, pulling pins on truth grenades. That's what we're doing. All right, so I got a piece here from The Federalist. And it came out in 2022, so it's a few years old. But it lays the foundation. Think about it. This is 3 years ago, and they're saying this. Starts off by pointing out that it says video footage recently surfaced, this is January of 22, on Twitter showing C4 explosives being dropped by a drone in a small village in Mexico, reportedly by members of the Jalisco New Generation Cartel following hours of clashes between armed groups. We're seeing this on our southern border right now. Drones are a huge deal. They're flying drones across the border with drugs, and they're flying drones across the border with weapons, and they're flying drones across the border with hand grenades. I mean, we've seen reports multiple times that that's happening on our southern border. But this article from The Federalist points out, it's the kind of video clip that surfaces on social media now and then that offers a glimpse of the outlandish happenings in Mexico. And most Americans have no way of making sense of these videos. Think about this. We just had an awful shooting just this past weekend, I guess, in New York City.
Not even. It was Monday.
Was it Monday? Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So we just had, just in the last few days, we just had an awful shooting in New York City. It's made national news. It's created a furor. It's become a campaign issue in the mayor's race for New York. And five people died. Five people dying in Mexico is a daily event. No kidding. What would you think if you saw a report that a drone dropped C4 explosives on something going on in the United States? What would you think if you saw that, not just questions about the 2020 election, but what would you think if you saw that cartel gunmen rounded up every campaign worker and volunteer working for the party they didn't like and held them hostage until after the campaign was over to make sure they couldn't work for the opposition. That happened in Mexico in 2019. What would you think, get this, if like in October of 2019, in what was became known as the Battle of Culiacan, National Guard troops in Mexico, under orders from the government, by the way, National Guard there is more like the like National Army, almost like state police in some ways. National Guard troops there arrested Ovidio Guzman Lopez, who was the 29-year-old son of the Sinaloa cartel boss Joaquin El Chapo Guzman. So they arrested the son of the Sinaloa cartel boss. So what does Sinaloa cartel do? Do they go, oh, shoot, they got the man? Nope. They loaded up teams with armored vehicles, heavy weaponry. They besieged the city where the National Guard was holding El Chapo's son. They trapped the guardsmen. They got into a pitched battle. And the standoff finally ended when the president of Mexico had to call the troops and tell them to release the prisoner just to avoid more bloodshed. Did he go back and try to take care of it later? No. In fact, the president of Mexico then went to the Sinaloa region and got pictures made with El Chapo's mom as he shook her hand and hugged her neck to make sure the world saw that he was okay, everything's all right, we've made peace. This is the way things work right now. You got the Sinaloa cartel, you got the New Jalisco cartel, you got other cartels of a smaller... And listen, they are running the show in Mexico. Now, there's places where the Mexican government is still, I mean, you got life. I mean, things go on. They've got infrastructure. It's not like the United States, but it's, you know, they've got stuff. They've got electricity. You know, they got industry. Certainly they do. But in so many places, it is not even safe to get off the beaten path. There's a piece here that I pulled from thehill.com. Came out 2 days ago. It says the new Cold War is now between countries and super cartels. It says Mexico's drug cartels are so tenacious, so powerful that under intense pressure, it's like they forge diamonds rather than crumble up. It said amid years of bloody turf wars, new tariffs aimed at hitting the global narcotics market and thousands more combat troops at the border, cartels are feeling the pressure. But the result? Two of the most notorious cartels, the Sinaloa and the Jalisco New Generation, have begrudgingly decided to unite in order to conquer this unprecedented alliance. That's a little scary. Said a seismic shift now in global organized crime demands the U.S. needs to urgently rethink its approach because a super cartel like this won't just be a criminal syndicate trafficking migrants and drugs. It'll become more like a rogue state. Now we're talking something like Hezbollah. I mean, they've already got armored vehicles and heavy weapons. They recruit directly out of the National Guard. They recruit out of the police forces. They bring in all of their foot soldiers. A lot of them they're not just peasants working the fields. A lot of they have trained military. They also bring in foreign actors to train them. They do. It says U.S. policy too often treats cartels like street gangs. President Trump's recent move to designate them terrorist organizations did make headlines, as did his talk of military action, but threats won't solve the crisis. This is not just like Breaking Bad on TV. There's no neat ending to the story, he says. It's a great piece. It says the war on drugs was an abject failure. It triggered a 900% increase in cartel activity. Cartels, though, are Mexico's fifth largest employer. So now we're talking about a state within a state, these cartels. And we're talking about the fact that they are the fifth largest employer in the whole nation. And they're recruiting children. And they're recruiting teenagers. And some estimate that as many as 460,000 young Mexicans are involved in organized crime. That's not the Crips and the Bloods. That's not gangs on a street corner. That's like entire sections of the country are under the control of a non-nation state entity, and the government can do nothing about it. And guess what? Most of that controlled area is literally on our southern border. It's not down south somewhere where it's further away. You can't just cross over the border in most places without the cartel saying so. The article I'm reading right now points out this is a humanitarian, developmental, and moral emergency, and it mirrors the same dynamics that allow violent extremist groups to flourish. In the fight against ISIS, Military forces did play a decisive role, but just as crucial were the grassroots actors who undermined the group's ideology from the ground up. In the U.S., community networks quietly blunted ISIS's influence, rejecting its doctrine from the pulpit, fostering interfaith solidarity, and helping law enforcement support the youth. What we're saying right now is it's going to take supporting the people of Mexico. Now, I'm not suggesting, hey, let's go down there and be a nation builder. That's not what I'm saying. In fact, I don't think we need to do that at all. That's not our role. But it's going to take continued toughness on the part of the U.S. administration, whether it be the Trump one or whoever follows. It's going to take an entire generation to begin weeding this crap out. Because what you're looking at right now, if the cartels, if that article is accurate, if the Sinaloa and the New Jalisco, which are huge, picture this, they have their own armies. If the Sinaloa and Jalisco cartels are on our southern border and they have taken over whole sections of northern Mexico, and they are violent anarchists intent upon trafficking people and drugs across our borders and doing damage where necessary to maintain their empires. They are willing to do mass murders. I've got stories here in my hand of like where the governor of one of the states opposed something that the cartels did, and suddenly a van load of dead bodies showed up on the front of the city hall. I've got another that says the mayor of one of the towns in northern New Mexico, in the Sinaloa region, the mayor himself turned out to be a cartel boss. He was arrested by the DEA in Guadalupe, Guatemala. When they arrested him, they found out that he had just become part of a major trafficking operation, and the DEA did the biggest drug seizure ever in the history of the Miami-Dade region, which is a big deal, because of what they found out from him. But when he was arrested, the Sinaloa cartel loaded up, went to the village, and they slaughtered people and beheaded them in the town square because they believed that somebody had given up the information. All that to say, this is on our southern border. This is right across the line. This is something that bleeds across the border. When you see things coming across the border, it's not always because they just want a better life. Sometimes it's because they're escaping, sure. Other times, it's because they're being trafficked, for sure. And other times, it's because they're part of the bad actors. One of the things we have to watch also is there's been a strong belief that some of our adversaries on the world stage are partnering with the cartels in order to do damage to the United States, China being one.
I was about to say, China.
China. If I'm not mistaken, one of the biggest purchasers of oil from Mexico is China. And then there's black market oil that gets scarfed up and sold to China. And then there's things that come in. Oh, like, I don't know, fentanyl from China. I mean, where do you think the fentanyl crisis comes from? Think about this. The cartels in Mexico take Chinese fentanyl, which comes to them, you know, shipped in industrial quantities, and they make it into drugs that then come across our border that have killed in the last 3 years well over 150,000 Americans. 9/11 only saw 3,000 plus or minus people die, which was awful. The fentanyl crisis being manufactured between China and the cartels has killed 150,000 plus Americans. And if that was an Al-Qaeda event, if that was a bombing, if that was something that happened from another nation dropping a nuke on us, we would be at war already. And I'm not advocating for it. I'm not saying let's go over there and fight them. What I am saying is we better maintain a tough stance and do not underestimate who these cartels are, especially if they're actually combining now and forming one super cartel. And then on top of that, let's don't ever discount the idea that just because it's across the border, it's not going to affect us. Failed states have a way of making regional instability. What you got, man?
Well, I was going to say, I mean, we're willing to go and bomb the Houthis in Yemen, and we're not able to. I mean, the argument of, you know, we don't want to upset the Mexican government isn't good enough for me, really, because, I mean, I think it's a good comparison talking about Hezbollah, the Houthis, to these cartels because they're, you know, separate from the government. But I think the cartels, in my opinion, are worse because I think they're way more interlinked with the Mexican government. Like, I feel like the Lebanese government at least tries to you know, this is whether they're successful or not. But you talk, I feel like a lot of the cartels and the Mexican government are one and the same in a lot of ways.
Oh, I agree.
So, I mean, and this is one, like, if you imagine if the cartels was launching missiles across the border and killing 150,000 Americans, how much different our response would be. They're just doing it in a subtle way, yeah. You know? So I feel like if we're willing to do what we did to the Houthis, but we're not able to do the same to the cartels, which is literally on our border and killing Americans, you know, yearly, it's like, I don't know. It's, we got to do something. And I feel like shutting down the border has helped a lot, but they're still, I mean, they're going to find a way. I mean, they're not going to give up. Just, oh, the border shut. We're done. You know,
it's interesting. Before we go to the break, I got to say, we don't know what conversations happen in the background.
Yeah.
We do know that, that Rubio and Hegseth have both been traveling south of the border. You know, Hegseth went down to Panama. Rubio, I believe, was in Mexico. And then Trump, we know, has talked to the new president of Mexico, Sheinbaum. And I am not going to be a bit surprised to find out that at some point in the conversation, it was said, you either get control of it or something will blow up south of the border. I'm not going to be a bit surprised. It may not have happened yet, but I'm not going to be a bit surprised to find out that this administration wasn't afraid to say it in a sidebar comment during negotiations.
Well, it's... I don't know. I'm sure there's a lot of SEAL Team 6 guys that could do some work, too. Not I've came for it necessarily, but I'm sure they could.
All right. Take me to a break, JP. We'll take the last break of the day on Thankful Thursday. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Lots of y'all texting in. I'll get a few of these when we get back. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.